Hello. If you are listening, then you're here on purpose. This is a podcast about fighting the system and staying rebellious while being incarcerated. The show takes the form of a recorded phone call between myself in Chicago and my twin brother locked up in a detention center in Alexandria, Virginia.
I am Jason.
And I am Jeremy.
And we are...
Twin Trouble!
Welcome to our show.
Welcome to the show. Power to the people.
Jeremy, how you doing, man?
It's all things considered. Got a good show for you today. It's our third episode. This one's called One Funky Onion. Yeah, one funky-ass onion. We're recording this episode live from solitary confinement. I mean, 2 hours a day. Bit of worse souls. 2 hours is not bad. But we got a good show. What are we talking about, Jay?
We'll get to the bottom of this funky-ass onion that put you in solitary. But a lot of shit has happened. This week on the noise segment, we're going to be talking about the recent police violence on the Chicago Transit Authority and the people's response and demands for no cops on the platforms and the call for free transit. We're also going to be talking shit on the high-profile pardons Trump issued. Julian Assange also had his first week of extradition hearings. We're going to get to that as well.
Right, and there's also been some movement on a grand jury resistance case. Might be some action soon. But before we get to that, let me tell you about this raggedy-ass jail. This raggedy-ass jail, the Alexandria Detention Center. Man, it never ends. It never ends.
You're in solitary confinement. Jimmy, what the fuck?
Well, so, yeah, they, you know, they do shakedowns all the time. And they found an onion in my cell.
Okay,
an onion. I love onions. So, I mean, as you know, I've been working in the kitchen work program as head cook. You know, it's a lot of work. You know, previously I haven't worked in the BOP for years. You know, ever since IWW and the whole prison strike stuff going on, I just decided, hell with that shit, I ain't working no more, right? But since I got here, right, starving to death, I saw the work program, I just thought I'd give it a try, so I started working out here. And I got a lot to say about this jail's food system, right? You know, as you know, Aramark is the contracted food provider, right? Aramark,
mm-hmm.
You know, the multi-billion dollar fucking food conglomerate that they do everything, don't they?
Yeah, sure. They basically are the prison food profiteers.
Yeah, not just prisons, of course. Hospitals, schools. You know, they're everywhere. So anyways, working this program, right? You know, I do it because it gives us a chance to eat good, eat a little bit better than the regular population trays, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the food here is... you know, it's heavy on carbs. It's just a lot of bread, you know, a lot of whites and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hard to stay healthy, and the commissary here is so fucking expensive that, you know, I decided, you know, I'll try to kitchen out and work there for a little bit. And I was eating good, but honestly, like, I didn't think the work was worth it. I've been doing it for 4 months, and it's just a lot of work, man. I mean, I was head cook. They made me head cook. And normally the cook got a partner and assistant. You know, I was basically working by myself the whole time. And man, I got so much to say about this janky kitchen over here. I mean... And I haven't really been talking about in the past couple of months I've been working here because I kind of, like, wanted to see where it goes. And I figured that one day I'd get caught for something, you know, and they'd kick me out anyway. Then I'd have a lot of leverage, you know what I mean? Like, I'd have a lot to you know, blow up the whole situation, right? And now that they fired me and put me in solitary confinement, you know, I got nothing to hold back for, you know, reason to hold back, right?
Yeah, tell us about all the BS they're pulling in the kitchen.
So, before we get to the onion story, let me tell you about this jail, right? First thing is it's infested with roaches. I mean, the kitchen, whole kitchen is completely infested with roaches.
Damn.
Like, everywhere. Like, you know, and you know, we've lived with roaches, right? I mean, we're talking about, like, bold roaches that don't even wait to, like, until the lights go off to have roaches, right?
Man.
There's so much equipment failure. So it's kind of an old jail. There's a lot of equipment that basically just doesn't work. When I first got here, there's like, a steamer that was kind of cool. It made things really easy. Anyway, that just broke. Now it's basically just, like, a hot, wet roach motel that sits there, right? They got two pots, right? They got a tilt pan and a big kettle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it, but basically the entire time I've been working there, only one of them has been working, so I basically had to cook everything in one thing after another, which, you know, really difficult when you're cooking for, like, 300-400 people.
Yeah, time-consuming. Yeah. One fucking pot for 300-400 people.
Yeah. I got to cook the rice first, drain it, clean it, and then cook the broccoli, drain it, clean it, and so forth, right? And Aramark being what it is, right, you know, I like cooking. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to work. You know, there's only so much you could do as jail food, right? It's, you know, county jails are not known for their quality of food. And apparently they have, like, these notorious patties, right? When I first got here, I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, I've had bad veggie patties that are better than these, like overdo, like trying to mimic the flavor of like beef barbecue or something like that. It's like this taste, you know, it just tastes so nasty.
Right.
Basically, every meal I cook involves one of two different types of meats, right? They got this mechanically separated poultry. You heard of that?
What, like stuff chicken nuggets is made of?
Kind of. Basically, what it is prime cuts of chicken, when they cut it for chicken breast that they sell to, like, the public, like, fancy, you know, right?
Yeah.
They still, like, parts of chicken that are still left in the bone.
Yeah.
And little scraps, like, in the nose and the ears and the feet and stuff like that, right? So what they
right.
what they do is they mechanically separate it, right? And then put it all back together again. And, yeah, they
totally.
Do use it for chicken nuggets and stuff in the world. But,
yeah.
Basically, that's what they serve us. Let me tell you, these things come in, like, these big blocks. They're, like, pink blocks, right? And you cook them, and man, this shit just looks like fucking zombie flesh. It's like a zombie melting.
Yeah.
Dude, it turns so great. So, like, dude, this is food, right? And then after a while, we figured out what it actually is used for, because I don't think they really, like, serve the public this type of stuff too often. I figured it out. This stuff is, like, basically cat food. It's basically cat food.
Whoa.
Like, when we take it out the freezer, it's still gray. It's still kind of gray and pink. Like, and it smells exactly like cat food. So all our meals involve either that or they got this beef soy patty mix, which is basically beef and soy put together, and that's like a little bit better than I like soy. I don't think there's anything wrong with soy. But.
Yeah.
But anyways, so basically every one of my meals is a combination of that. Let's talk about the quality of the food, right? So we have these vegetables, right? Like they come in these bags. These bags of pre-diced celery or pre-diced onions and stuff like that. And the stuff is so fucking nasty. I mean, like the celery, right? The celery's brown. Like, one time I showed it to the staff, and they're like, look at this. Like, oh, that's just freezer burn, right? That's just melted and refrozen. It's like, so serve it. Like, oh, yeah, go ahead and serve it, right? Anyways, I thought it was maybe just that one time, but every single time they order the celery, it's always like that. Like, this brown. And it's not even, like, celery chunks. Like, you can still see the shape of, like, the celery, the, you know. But it's just, like kind of like the ground-up, like threads, like shards of, like, fiber type of celery. It's like, dude, this isn't even food.
My God.
But on the other hand, right, you know, in the freezer and the cooler, they got all the food that we use, right? It's all bagged, pre-diced, whatever, right? But on the other hand, they have all the staff food, right? And they have all fresh broccoli, fresh, like, whole peppers, whole onions, whole pieces of celery, you know, all real food, basically, right? Which none of we don't get. We'll never get to eat, right? But it's still right there, though. I see it every day, right?
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, it's the quantity of food. You know, it's never enough, is it, right? But they always short us on ingredients, right? Like, for example, like I would be cooking spaghetti, and the recipe card, it calls for, like, 40 pounds of spaghetti, or it'd call for, like, something like 16 pounds of tomato paste, right? But they'd always short me, all the time, right? So they'd give me, like, maybe 25 pounds of spaghetti, right? I'm like, dude, I can't work with this. We're going to be short, like we are every single time, right? They're like, we'll just do it, we'll cook more if we have to, right? Or we'll just water it down, and the noodles will absorb it, right? Something like that, right? Or they'll cut it with, like, flour or cornstarch to, like, thicken it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here, I'm like, complicit in this. I'm like, damn, I can't even believe I'm doing this, right? But anyways, you know, I always look out, you know, they give us so little spices. That's the main complaint, is that the food is just not spiced. But I have a whole spice rack, so I always try to fucking load it up every chance I get, right? Basically, triple
it
up at least, right? And as far as the spices goes, one of the spices is pepper, right? But they actually don't use real pepper. They use what they call imitation pepper. And it says on the recipe cards and in the boxes, and I've tasted it, it's not pepper. I don't even know what it's really made of.
Who knows?
Fucking imitation pepper.
Watered down pepper.
Yeah, it's not even pepper at all. It's like, I don't know, what the fuck is it? It doesn't really look like pepper if you look at it real close, but.
Pretty gross.
So anyways, I do what I can despite the limitations, right? You know, there's just so much going on over there. We're supposed to get, like, a staff meal every day, right? That's the incentive they tell you to sign up for the kitchen. You get a staff tray every lunch, right? Right, but we basically don't at all. Like, they get, like, a whole salad bar that's got, like, banana peppers and sliced peppers and all kinds of stuff like that, right? But, yeah, we don't get any of that. Apparently,
are you preparing the food for the guards, too?
Oh, no, I would never do that.
No.
I cook the evening meals for general population, right? They do have someone cook food for the guards, but they always, you know, they rely on, I don't even think they'd even bother asking me, but they rely on, you know, basically the bootlicker to do it. There's always a couple, right?
Yeah, that's for sure. Best favor is being favorable to the guards.
Right. So anyways, I'm just, like, overworked and just, like, I'm just kind of sickened by this whole process. I was eating good, though. You know, it was nice because I could eat as much, like, broccoli as I want or stuff like that, right? And I was actually taking pleasure in the fact that I could cook the vegetarian alternative. So I'd always hook up the vegetarian alternative. I'd make, like, badass fried rice. I would just really spend a lot of time cooking it, right? Instead of just, like, basically put it all in one pot and stir it up, which is, you know, how they tell me to do the other stuff.
Right.
But anyways, you know, and me being who I am, you know what I mean? I feel like if I'm working for them, right, for a dollar a day, right, literally a dollar a day, right?
Yeah.
And they're short enough, I feel like I got to, how do I put this? I'm going to get them more than they get me. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I'm going to try to get more out of them than they try to get out of me. So, you know, I've been robbing them blind the whole time I've been there. The whole time I've been there. Peanut butter, fucking real onions. I've just been bringing a whole fucking onions back, you know what I mean? Slicing up and making food with leftovers. So, I haven't really had to spend many money on commissary the whole time I've been working in the kitchen except for the coffee. So, I mean, all things, you know, I'm pretty slick. I, you know, got away with it for about 4 or 5 months, right? But lately I've been doing a whole lot of shakedowns, right? They've been shaking us down damn near every week, right? Looking for pens or something. Remember I told you about last week?
Yeah, we were talking
anyways,
about
anyways, sort of begins 1 week. They come in and they just tear the cell apart. They take all the books I had, just took them, right?
Shit.
And it's the prison's books anyways, but, you know, now I got to go back and try to find them, you know, whatever. And you're still allowed to have five. But more importantly, they took all the newspapers I had myself. Right, and you know these newspapers, you know, people from the world, they, you know, nice enough to subscribe you to. They pay a lot of money for that stuff, right? I mean, the New York Times Sunday edition is just like $6 paper, right? So they probably took maybe 8 newspapers and stuff. You're allowed to have a couple, right? And so I'm like, dude, what the fuck, right? So I went to them, and they're like mumbling, oh, you know, I think you're only allowed to have papers if it's from the same day. Like, it's like, dude, don't even lie. You know, when they're mailed to me, you know, sometimes I get them really late, especially the Chicago Tribune, I get it really late, like a couple weeks usually, right? So, I mean, so basically, if that's the policy, that's, it's basically a ban on newspapers, right? But apparently, it's not a rule book about the whole same day thing. It does say that you're only allowed 2 papers, actually, which is kind of bogus. They didn't do a confiscation form. They didn't put it in my property. They got like a little property that's not, you know, we don't have access to it, but it's like, you know, if you get locked up. You know, it's a kind of jail. They have a property, like, you put all your clothes in and stuff, and if you ever hear and you have something that you're not allowed to have, like, you get, like, a birthday card mailed to you, you're not allowed to have cards here, they put it in your property, right? So that way, when you're released, you'll be able to take it with you. Of course, whatever's in my property, I'm not going to be able to take it with me when I go back to the feds, but anyway.
Well, yeah, because the systems are different, huh?
Yeah, I got to go back to the feds, but they don't let you transfer property from this county to the feds, even though there's a lot of people in fed cases here who got, like, radios, and, you know, like, thermal shirts or a commissary, they're not allowed to take it with them for some reason.
Right, but they're the ones who even put you in that system, so it's like,
yeah, right.
You don't, yeah, it's like you just don't get to keep anything you're gonna get here while you've been there for 4 months.
Right, and not only could I couldn't take any of the property with me from the feds here either, for that matter. You know, I already had like a whole bid's worth of stuff, you know, radios, sweats, you know, whatever. Right? Not to mention my legal work, which is still MIA. But anyway, so they take all my newspapers. I go to the cabin. I'm like, dude, what's up, man? They took all my shit. Like, well, you know, yeah, we should just write, I'll investigate it right down. You should be able to get compensated for them. You know, they're not supposed to, you know, they're supposed to do a form. I'm like, cool, right? Anyways, a couple days later, they do another shakedown, right? And they take every one of my newspapers again, right? Just every single one of them. I was like, dude, did you not get the memo, right? And they also took, like, an origami piece of art I did, an origami dodecahedron. It's like a, kind of like a sphere, like a 12-sided origami model. It's really super cool.
It's a pretty popular one.
Yeah, you know. Really, it's really easy to do. You take 30 sheets of paper and you fold it a certain way. It's a really easy fold, and you put them all together, makes it nice. So I just kind of had that in my cell, just, you know, just chilling. It's kind of like, you know, I look at it and think about it all the time. Anyways, I took that, right?
No,
easily stole it. Let's just call it what it is. They stole it from me, right?
Yeah.
They stole it, right? But they also found one funky onion. One funky onion. I thought I hit it well. I got away with it basically every single other shakedown. Anyways, they found one funky onion, right? So a lot of times here in the kitchen, right, people get called and stuff all the time. They kind of look the other way a lot of times, right? But what they do is if you form a card, they kind of, what they call it, put you on contract, right? You know, say if you have a formal warning, right? Yeah, they didn't do anything like that. They just said, do not pass, go directly to jail, right? So they took me right away, like the general population unit, I don't know, 3CS. It's, you know, a general population unit, right? Like I was at when I first got here. But they kept me on 23-hour lock. I was on lockdown status for 5 days. I'm like, whatever. It is what it is. Get caught. You know. So I was on lock. And so I could still go out for 1 hour a day and hang out with everybody, you know, take a shower, make a phone call, right? You know, I still had all my property there. I still had my coffee and my radio, you know. So that's really all you need for the 23 hours, right? But,
yeah, coffee, shower, 23 hours of nothing.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Maybe a phone call or something, as long as I got my books. And, you know, I wouldn't have to take an onion out the kitchen if the commissary didn't sell onions, you know, or any vegetables or any healthy foods at all. You know, all they sell are chips, cookies, candies, you know. No fresh fruits or vegetables whatsoever, right? So, you know, if a cook can't have one onion, you know, I won't work for them anyway. So anyways, my time was about up, my 5 days, right? I was thinking I'd just be let out. But no, they actually take me to the hole, right? There's a whole unit here that's a lockdown unit, right? Administrative segregation, or ADSEG, right? No, I was like, dude, what the fuck? I finished my 5 days. Like, why am I not in general population, right? So I haven't gotten an answer for that yet. They just basically, I'm here, right? But now I'm on 22 hours lockdown. I'm out for 2 hours a day.
So, how do they tell you are in 22 hours?
There's like a chart on the wall that says if you're on this cell, you get this hour. You know, the hours change every day. I'm actually released for 2 hours a day with one other prisoner who's in a different cell who also gets released during those 2 hours. There's 12 people in this unit, so we each get 2 hours. But,
I see.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been to solitary. I've been to the whole, you know, a dozen times or something, right? And honestly, like, this is not as bad as a lot of holes I've been to. You know, I still got my radio, my coffee. I still got my mail and stuff, but I'm more mad about them taking these. So I follow those grievances, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like I said earlier, like, about me working in the kitchen, I was kind of sick of working all the time. Like, it's kind of like a vacation for me. I get to sleep, read. You know, I got a good three-part series of Neal Stephenson books, you know, so.
Is that the author of Cryptonomicon?
Yeah, Cryptonomicon, Snow Crash, Epic. I read every one of his books. I couldn't even believe they had the series in the library. I couldn't even believe it.
Wow.
I mean, like, you know, the usual janky-ass books in the library, right? I couldn't believe I found the series. So I'm chilling. I'm chilling. I'm, you know, if they ask me to go back to the kitchen if they want to, I'd be like, no, thanks. No, thanks. But, yeah, more to me is like, dude, these people got caught with 40 pieces of chicken, bags of coffee, you know. And I really fuck with the coffee over here because it's really not that great. It's like state coffees. But anyways, all these people never even got locked down. Here I am, dude. It's like, really? ADSEG for one funky onion?
One funky onion.
So that's what's going on with me. I'm not tripping, though.
You don't have any idea when you're going to be out of that situation?
No, I guess it's kind of like my case, right?
Oh, yeah. Just we'll tell you when.
Free time, you know?
Yeah. What legal basis do they even have to keep you in solitary confinement? I mean, isn't that just like standard practice for any time there's any sort of discipline actually hearing the first thing they do is immediately throw you in the hole and don't tell you shit?
Oh, definitely, dude. Yeah, like, it's like you said, for any security-related reason, they could just hold you in segregation until they determine whatever, whatever. I mean, the BOP's got its own rules for it, which I'm more familiar with than how they do it here. Here, I just seen them just do whatever. Like, they haven't given me a reason. So, like I said, solitary, like, I'm not a bit, so.
Right. We're going to have to give a content warning of police violence for this next one. Just last week, two Chicago cops shot an unarmed man, Ariel Roman, on the CTA at their Grand Red Line stop. We're listening to some of the chants at one of the youth-led rallies on the CTA in response to the shooting. He survived but was hospitalized with serious injuries. A person at the scene uploaded a video to Twitter which shows Ariel being tackled, tased, and maced, but the pigs are unable to cuff him and he gets away and reaches an escalator, where he was first shot in the back. Ariel then climbs the escalator where he is followed by the pigs and then shot again. and subsequently arrested and charged for resisting arrest and some unknown narcotics charge, both of which are later dropped.
Oh, yeah, well, they always have to justify, after the fact that they basically attempted to murder him.
Yeah. If you're wondering what Ariel did to attract the violence of the cops, he was observed passing through the doors between train cars, which apparently is a city violation. But it's the kind of minor violation that every single person commits on a daily basis in some form or other, from jaywalking to littering. The city claimed that increased police presence on public transportation was to increase safety and handle fare evasion. But it turns out if you hop a turnstile and ride for free, theoretically costing the CTA a loss of $2.25 in revenue, you could be killed by trigger-happy pigs. Many of the bullets missed and ricocheted off the walls of the subway station where nearby commuters were waiting for their trains during the busiest time of the entire week, Friday late afternoon rush hour. This actually happened literally hours after the city announced an increase of the number of transit cops by 50, now newly armed with a GPS and advanced surveillance system of an average 220 cameras in every single station. Just last week, SWAT officers were patrolling the trains and multiple times in 2019. ICE agents were posted up on train stations, despite Chicago's status as a sanctuary city for undocumented immigrants. This neoliberal-ass pro-cop Mayor Lightfoot, after backtracking on her campaign promise to end the $95 million cop academy, hired Charlie Beck, the racist stop and frisker police chief from L.A., as an interim police superintendent to replace the disgraced Eddie Johnson, who, by the way, will still continue to collect pension until he dies, despite his 3 years of corruption, utter failure in handling police accountability. This whole thing basically shows bankruptcy of police reformism. The consent decree of 2019 was issued by the state to overhaul the Chicago PD with no trust within the community after the Kwan McDonald cover-up. After all the training and mandates on cops to use de-escalation techniques whenever possible over the use of deadly force, Ariel was still shot and could have lost his life. Even though the mayor said the shooting was, quote, extremely disturbing, and although there is an ongoing investigation that now includes the FBI actually working with Cook County, the Fraternal Order of Police are backing the two pigs who shot Ariel. The union president complained of the incident that there were all these people watching and did nothing to help the cops with the arrest. This does not show signs of a reformed police department. People are tired of this pro-cop Mayor Lightfoot, who, by the way, just endorsed Biden for the DNC. People are demanding instead of investing millions in hiring more cops to harass people, we should be putting money into the communities who have been ravaged by systemic disinvestment and over-policing. Put it towards education and health, and make transit accessible and pig-free.
Yeah, that is really terrible news. Unfortunately, it's not surprising considering the Chicago police's history of brutality and murder, you know, for pigs. But yeah, that just shows like what we were talking about in the last episode, the failures of stop and frisk and broken windows. Police philosophy has been debunked and shown that really it creates these altercations and incidents with police to where they go around what they say policing quality of life, like cleaning up the streets by harassing people with, you know, basically petty crimes. And then that leads to incidents with the police to where they end up shooting this man.
It's unbelievable.
And they would have got away with it if a person wasn't there on hand to record the incident. You know, the police would have later changed their stories or backed each other up to support their narrative for justifying their attack.
Exactly. I mean, you know, cops always claim that the person is always resisting arrest. But as it turns out, the cops just had extremely difficulty putting the cuffs on the person and the individual got away. And was just walking up the escalator stairs, like literally with the back turned, posing no threat to anybody. And one of the officers just said to the other one to shoot him, and they did. They did. And there was that person that had posed no threat to anyone. There was no issue at self defense or personal safety or anything like that at all.
Right, he didn't have a weapon. There's no reasonable belief that the police could have believed that his life was in danger. This reminds me of the Laquan McDonald murder a couple of years ago, in which. You know, the police, they shot the man as he was trying to run away. He's trying to get away from the guy. And they shot him 16 times, even when he's already on the ground. But anyways, they went to the Burger King to get the tape, to delete the tape. They badgered a witness to try to get her to change her story to support the police. And basically, you know, covered up the crimes. And really, they only held the cop who killed Laquan McDonald accountable after people were so mad and rioting and so forth. And even then, even when they found him guilty of murder, they only gave him, what, like 6.5 years?
Yeah.
6.5 years in prison. I mean, I don't think I know anybody who've ever got convicted of murder and got any time like that. I also reminds me of another something that's been in the news. There was a recent Supreme Court decision in which the case of a Border Patrol agent who shot and murdered somebody who was on the Mexico side of the border, the case came in front of the Supreme Court. Family was suing for damages, right? But in a 5-4 ruling, you know, a conservative-controlled Supreme Court, they decided that because it happened on the Mexico side of the border, that they didn't have the constitutional standing to sue, which is pretty scary because, I mean, it sends a basically a clear message to the law enforcement, especially in the militarized border, that they could basically just literally get away with murder, and there's no recourse. And also that if you're not a citizen, that you're not afforded the same rights and privileges of as if you were a United States citizen.
Pretty unbelievable. Pretty unconscionable.
Yeah. Speaking of getting away with murder, Trump did a bunch of new pardons and stuff. If you remember, you know, it's not unlike him to pardon war criminals such as the Navy SEAL Gallagher or racist police like Joe Arpaio. But Trump did another series of pardons that are clearly like sending a political message. He pardoned, of course, former Governor Blagojevich, you know, the corrupt Illinois governor.
He was tried and convicted for attempting to sell Obama's Senate seat, in addition to trying to extort campaign contributions from Children's Hospital in exchange for funding for their program. He also pardoned former New York Police Commissioner Bernie Kerik, convicted of tax fraud. Mike Milken, the 1% Wall Streeter, known as the Junk Bond King. Man, you should get a photo
good,
of this
yeah.
guy. What, is that a book he wrote or something?
No, he was the Junk Bond King, right? And he was known for kind of like the Wolf of Wall Street, greed is good, which is really up Trump's alley, right? I mean, police chiefs, corrupt governors.
Yeah, Rod Blagojevich appeared on his fucking show, like
yeah.
a buddy of his. He said he did nothing wrong.
You know, a lot of these pardons he's doing, we're talking about people who aren't even in prison anymore, right? So it's just a purely symbolic move. And you hear a lot of prisoners talk about how Trump's pardoning a lot of people because they keep bringing up the one or two cases that he's pardoned, like a handful of people for, you know, lifers serving for drug crimes, right? And those are, like, so transparently, like, tokenizing cases to try to, like, score some cheap points and to make it seem like, he's not proclaiming himself as to be some type of criminal justice reform advocate, right?
Right.
But here he is, racist cops, corrupt governors, like, basically sending a message to his own cabinet and his, you know, loyalists in the Republican Party that basically, I got your back, you know, like he intervened most recently in associate Roger Stone.
Right. He issued a tweet how the sentencing memorandum for Roger Stone's corruption can bring up to 8 years, and immediately the Justice Department tries to rework the law of how to figure out who could convict him for less time.
The prosecutors in the case, like, mysteriously resign and recuse themselves from the case after Trump basically gives the orders that, yeah, they're recommending way too much time.
The system was ever about checks and balances, and Trump's slightly overstepping, dictating to the Justice Department that he wants to protect his buddy.
Right. I mean, I think he even, like, ridiculously proclaimed himself to be, like, the nation's chief law enforcement officer. Really. Like, some criminal justice reform advocate.
Speaking of pardons, this week we heard a lot of rumors about Trump actually offering a pardon to Julian Assange through a former U.S. Representative Rohrabacher. That Rohrabacher offered Assange that if he would provide evidence that the 2016 DNC email leaks were not sourced from a Russian hacker, Trump would offer Julian Assange pardon. Now, Rohrabacher went back on an earlier claim and tried to clarify that he didn't say he was actually speaking on behalf of Trump himself. Rather that if Assange were to give him evidence that the source was not from Russia, he would then make a plea to Trump to offer a pardon. Although Rohrabacher had, in fact, visited both Trump and Assange within a short period of time, the White House flatly denied that Trump ever made such an offer. However, it would be entirely on brand with Trump's usage of his political power to protect and pardon his allies. It would serve Trump to prevent any information coming out of Assange that would indicate that the Orange One had any influence on the release of the DNC leaks and boosted his 2016 campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it really is up Trump's alley. This whole quid pro quo, like, backroom dealing is just kind of a sleazeball thing, you know, to do to dangle a pardon over Assange. Like, if he would release information that would basically clear Trump of, you know, his collusion with Russia on to help him win the election. And furthermore, it really also just confirms the fact that the whole prosecution and extradition of Assange is not a matter of a legitimate criminal investigation, but a purely political maneuver which was what his extradition hearing in London week was all about.
You're listening to the sounds of activists blowing whistles outside of Alexandria Detention Center in support of yourself, Jeremy, and Chelsea locked up in that jail, and Julian Assange in the UK. This was part of a week of action support of Assange's first week of extradition hearing. We got to know, did you see them?
Yeah, definitely. That was super cool. No, I was actually on the 23-hour lockdown that I was telling you about when it had happened. And as it happened, though, my lawyers were actually calling me at the exact same moment, so they actually, the cops let me out of the cell to use the lawyer phone. And while I was talking, like, a couple of the prisoners came out. They're like, dude, they're outside with the protesters. They got your name. And I was like, what, right now? So I was like, so I was, you know, out in population for a minute, and I got a chance to go look outside the window. And they had, you know, of course, a crowd of people getting all excited inside the unit, looking outside the window, and there it is, right in front of the gate. A bunch of people with banners and flags. I was like, dude, fucking cool. Later on, I went to a program they do every week about Path for Peace, and they met a couple other people from different units, and they all saw the demonstration as well. And, you know, little things like this gives people, like, a lot of excitement, right? I mean, it's cool that people know that there are people out there who you know, think about them. You know, you all just did the demonstration in New Year's, of course, a month or two ago.
Noise demos. Let's make more of them.
Blow the whistle, right?
Blow the whistle.
You know, the United States authorities are, of course, calling their extradition request and prosecution of Julian Assange a purely criminal matter, instead of what it obviously is, a political persecution. And it's confirmed, Bill. You know, you have people like Mike Pompeo talking about Assange. You know, people talking about his rights as a journalist. But he's like, Assange is not a United States citizen. You know, he doesn't have free speech rights. He's like, and that kind of reminded me, like, we were talking about the person at the Mexican border who was shot by the Border Patrol, how they're saying that he didn't have constitutional standing to sue either, for that matter. And so basically, like, they're going to deny Assange his rights. And basically the whole thing is about criminalizing journalism. You know, you hear Trump talk about the press being enemy to people. And I think at one point he had mentioned something about how he believes that whistleblowers are traitors that deserve the death penalty, right? So how could someone in this political context truly believe that this is anything but a purely political process?
Exactly. Basically, the end of the first week of Julian Assange's extradition hearings ended with the defense team laying out arguments to how the motivations for the U.S. to extradite are political in nature and thus an abusive process, which we talked extensively in episode 2 of our podcast. This court case will reconvene again in March 18th, and we'll have updates as they come. Terrifying specter of the Democratic National Convention dominates the media alongside news of the spread of the coronavirus. But I read an interesting story about the country of Iran, who recently released 70,000 prisoners to prevent the spread of the virus in the jail system. They were released on a furlough and actually having to pay a bond, which illustrates the classist and racist nature of the entire money bond system. Like, if you cannot afford to pay, you are potentially stuck in a situation where you are more vulnerable to the spread of the virus. This raises an important question about the U.S. government's plan for the safety of inmates in the prison system, who face increased risks of infection due to living in unsanitary conditions in extremely close proximity to each other. Jeremy, what is your impression of the jail's response to an emergency such as the coronavirus?
Well, that's a good question. You know, of course, they don't tell us anything. We don't know if there's a plan, what the plan would be. Yeah, like you said, you know, people in jails and prisons definitely are increased risk. You know, because like you said, like we're close proximity. We don't have as ready access to medical facilities. It is basically a joke, basically the bare minimum. Basically, the spread of colds and diseases is really rapid. You know, when one person in a unit gets a cold, you better believe the next day or two everybody can get a cold, right? And for us, there's no real escape from that. We can't. If we are sick, we're still going to have to go to the chow hall. We're still going to have to, you know, interact with people, which really puts everybody at risk. You know, I definitely think they should release everybody. You know, like
yeah, right.
You know, I mean, I wonder what, you know, the United States plan, like you said, is. I think they should also, you know, if it's pandemic proportions we're talking about here, like it's really frightening to think that if it does start spreading in jails, that, you know, we wouldn't really have an escape route, metaphorically speaking.
Right. Reminding me of the time you spent when you were locked up in MCC New York during Hurricane Sandy. You wrote a statement about the incident talking about how the whole jail was on lockdown. You didn't hear from any guards or anybody for days at a time.
Yeah.
Did you imagine that as sort of being what a resource that the jails would leave themselves to, just basically keep everyone in the cells and, you know?
Yeah, basically let us send to ourselves. Yeah, during Hurricane Sandy, you know, we didn't have any water or electricity for days. We had cold meals for like a week. They brought us meals the next day and a little bottle of water and stuff. You know, in other jails and prisons like in Texas and Louisiana, during the hurricanes, they definitely were situations where people locked themselves with, like, water flooding up and not able to drink any kind of sanitary water and all. So, you know, there's definitely a lack of emergency planning going on in the nation's prisons. Like you said, we're not really sure what their plan is about this virus. And as far as what they're doing here in Alexandria Detention Center, one thing that they've already happened because of the coronavirus is that they've actually canceled all programming. That means all religious programs, you know, they have a health class. Basically, you know, it's one of the few ways that prisoners in different units here are able to see each other, right? So, you know, from other floors. And not to mention, you know, that prisoners have a right to religious freedom and all that. So they use, you know, they have, like, Catholic mass and stuff like that. And so they, under the specter of the coronavirus, they canceled all of those. And then also the other day, you know, and this might have just been the one deputy who was, like, a kind of a new Jack Green, you know. He you know, he's going through the mail, and, you know, each one, he's handing him a mail, and he's opening it up, and someone had printed out a series of memes, you know, memes, right, pictures of him. Yeah, he was like, oh, yeah, I don't know if we could, you know, because of the coronavirus, you know, we got some new, I was like, oh, yeah, the coronavirus, right? He's like, oh, yeah, you know, I don't think we give you the internet printouts, man, there's some new rules. He's like, listen, man, you don't get coronavirus from memes. He's like, listen, you don't get memes from, you know, that much.
Wait, they made the memes illegal?
It was just this one deputy, but yeah, he basically said that.
News from Italy is coming through about widespread prisoner uprisings, where inmates are starting fires and escaping their captors, protesting the overcrowding and decrepit conditions of their prisons, where a number of coronavirus deaths have occurred. With the national conversation about health care and a major lack of coverage, and the fact that coronavirus is particularly vulnerable to people with low immune systems, it's starting to look like that coronavirus is a symptom and capitalism is the disease. But seriously, friends and comrades, take care of your health. See a doctor to the best of your abilities. Be good to those around you. Take care of each other. We need you in good spirits as well.
Волны расселяются, раскаленные...
Okay, this last section of the podcast, we're going to be talking about the movement in your grand jury case, about the Grumbles motion y'all filed. You have a hearing coming up this Friday the 13th. In fact, both you and Chelsea will have a ruling on the Grumbles.
You know, today they actually brought me in front of the grand jury again. Can you believe it?
What? Again?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they did it 5 months ago, right? And it was a refuse, and it was found in contempt, right? And so, in anticipation of this hearing that we have, I believe they pulled, tried it one more time. I mean, I think it's a sign of desperation, what my intuition is. But anyways, yeah, they actually pulled me in front of the grand jury again. They pulled me, as the story goes, FBI came once again, just like last time. Instead of like the normal prison transport, you know, they drove me to the federal building. And, you know, my lawyers all know about this and stuff, so they met me there. But before they got there, right, so I'm in that little room with the magazines, right, same room. They had different magazines, though, right?
And so, different magazines.
Yeah, no, they had People and, you know, there's some bullshit-ass magazines. And he looked at them, but he didn't take any this time. Remember last time they took the Washington Examiner? So, you know, so I'm sitting in a nice rolling chair, flipping through magazines, and, you know, the FBI's in the room, but, you know, of course he can't talk. We're waiting for my lawyer, right? So, you know, the prosecutor comes in. He's like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm really glad you're here. I'll wait till your lawyer. I'm like, yeah, whatever. So, and you know, man, listen, I don't even want to look at this guy in the eyes. You know what I mean? Like, normally, like, when I communicate, I like looking at somebody in the eyes.
Yeah.
But, man, I was just so uncomfortable. You know, I mean, in a room full of FBI. And, you know, they're just sitting there just, we're actually waiting for, like, a couple minutes. So, you know, the prosecutor comes back and says, oh, you know, is your lawyer, you know, is just going to be the one lawyer? Is your other lawyer going to be? He's like, listen, hey, this is entirely too many questions. I already said I wasn't going to answer any questions. Right. And so, you know, a few minutes passed. I'm flipping through magazines. I'm reading an article about Kate McKinnon, right, and who's a, you know, former hair comedian. So I'm reading that, and the FBI just sitting there nervously, and one of them just kind of just casually, you know, starts making conversation. You know, like, oh, so where are you from? I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know.
they just try to wait you out.
Right. I mean, I guess it's just he's just being like courteous, you know what I mean? And I tell him, yeah, I'm from Chicago. And then he says about the art. He said, man, you know, I was looking at your tattoos. Don't be mine, but that's actually pretty nice. He's like, the V for Vendetta one. You have is like, you got that one in prison. I was like, I thought about it. I was like, all right, fine. I'll answer this one. He said, tell him, yeah, I did right. Anyways, my lawyer come right. Kick all the agents out the room and all that. Man. You wouldn't believe it, man. The most amazing food ever.
Coffee. You worry about your food?
Yeah, I brought the food. I couldn't even believe it, man. Like, fucking a vegetarian sandwich, fucking coffee, juice, like real orange juice, a chocolate bar. I couldn't even believe it, man. I couldn't even believe it. It was the best sandwich I had in forever, dude.
My God. Like, what kind of sandwich?
Yeah, it was, like, real flavorful. It was, like, type of, like, Mediterranean vegetable sandwich.
Nice.
It had, like, some cheese in it. It was a name brand sandwich joint. It was badass. So badass. So, anyways. You know, so my lawyer's there, and the prosecutor comes in, right, and the FBI, he's like, so, before we go in there, you know, you don't have to say anything right now, but you just, you know, listen. And so he's basically making another pitch, right, basically just trying to see where I'm at, you know, he's like, you know, and he's got, like, these big-ass binders, right, like, huge-ass three-ring binders, one onto the Sabu chat logs.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Sabu right, so chat logs? All like a cartoon?
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe it was, like I said, like the scene out of The Matrix where Agent Smith sits down with the fucking binder and starts flipping through it, right? But,
yeah, I was going to ask if you were just going to give them the Neo.
Yeah, right. Yeah, at first I was thinking hit with The Matrix, right? You know, oh, that sounds like a really good deal, but I got a better one. I want to give you the finger. Can you give me my phone call, right? But I already made up my mind that I'm going to hit him with the Bartleby instead. You know, Bartleby, the Scrivener, he was known for his refusal in civil disobedience, but he would just say, I would prefer not to. I prefer not to. Right? That was his thing. So that was going to be my line when I go to the grand jury, right? But before we get there, so the prosecutor, he just sits down. And, you know, like I said, I have trouble looking him in the eye, right? Because it's just so weird, so awkward, so uncomfortable. So, but the one thing I noticed is he's got the same, he always wears these ties, right? These ties that have little dogs on them. Little dogs on them. And this is like the third time I've seen a different dog tie he's got. Like the first time in court, he wore a tie with a dog. One of his lawyers even pointed out. And then he just says simply, what could the United States government do that could change your mind and get you to obey the law here? And that's it, right? That's all he says, right? Shit, I'm sitting there eating a fucking sandwich, right?
What?
The whole room of people, I'm sitting there eating a sandwich, so I was like, oh, fuck, my lawyer's like, So then,
that's incredible.
He's like, because he basically says, you know, I know you think you're doing the honorable thing here. You're very smart, but you know, Julian Assange, you know, he's not worth it for you, man. He's not worth your sacrifice. You know, this Russian spy, you know. And so I tell him, like, yep, there's absolutely nothing that's gonna give me a chamber of mind. This, I'm not answering any questions, right? So basically, we're just like, okay, we can go in there and get it over with. I only finished one part of the sandwich. I still have a sandwich to go, right? So I walk in there, sit down. It's the same group of people, the same grand jury. I recognize a couple of their faces, right?
Yeah.
So he sits down. I affirm. He's like, so he was here back in September. He refused to answer questions. You've been held in civil contempt for the past 5 months. I'm going to ask you these questions again. Right. And so he's like, did Julian Assange ever ask you to hack any website? I was like, yeah, I prefer not to answer. And this is what he does. He's like, what? Really? You're going to Bartleby the Scrivener on me? He's like, dude, he actually recognized it. I was like, wow, you fancy on Bartleby, right? Yeah, he's like, and he actually kind of laughed. Like, I thought it was kind of funny. Like, he like knew the reference, right?
Man, you know you're in the Matrix when the jury fucking gets your joke, man.
Yeah, yeah. So then he's like, well, we can just go and rattle off the same questions, right? He read the same questions as last time, 7. I basically said, nah, I prefer not to ask another one, right? Then he'd ask another one, right? I sit there and pretend to think about it for a minute. He's like, nah, you know what? I prefer not to answer that one either. So then he's like, so those are all the questions that we asked last time. Does anyone else in the grand jury have a question, right? And I don't know even why he asked that, right? So then he, like, is quiet for a second. He starts picking up his papers like we're about to leave, right? And then someone in the back just, like, mumbles, like, yeah, do you like jail? I was like, what the fuck? Like,
what the hell?
Like, who the fuck said, like...
I prefer not to answer that question.
Yeah, I'm not answering that one either. And, you know, of course I didn't say anything, but I just looked at the guy. I was like, really? Really? Do I like jail? But, so we go back to the room. And, you know, I'm starting to finish my sandwich, right? Because I know they're basically just going to kick me out and send me back to the bullpens and send me back to jail. So I still got a bag of chips, a fucking jar of orange juice. So I'm sitting there with my lawyer just eating a sandwich, right? So he sits down and he's like, all right, so you don't want to answer the questions, but, you know, maybe we can sit here and just discuss, you know, world literature, you know? And so he just kind of, like, just starts casually making some small talk, just some casual, Herman Melville, you know, starts talking about another book he wrote that I never read.
Yeah.
And then he's basically saying, he's kind of using, like, talking about literature as, like, an allegory to talk about, like, the futility of utopia. And I was like, I'm just sitting there just listening, eating the sandwich. I'm like, he's like, yeah, you know, Bartleby, you know, the story, he ended up dying in prison. And they talk about another character from a Herman Melville book that where the guy died in the gallows. And then my lawyer is just, like, making a conversation about, like, oh, some science fiction books he likes. And prosecutor's like, how he just ordered, like, an Isaac Asimov book of jokes. I was like, wow. Like,
what the fuck? That is the creepiest kind of, like, fucking low-key fucking bullshit that's fucking trying to get at you. He's like O'Brien from Brave New World.
Yeah, it was really weird. So they're talking, right? So then he's like, so why don't you answer this question? You know, first he says, he kind of implies that all options are on the table, that, you know, that they could press for, he didn't say it directly, but he said that they could press for, like, criminal contempt. And I was like, well, I didn't say anything. I'm still eating the sandwich. Then he implies that, like, whatever, like, you could still, like, look like, you know, you disobeyed, but we could keep it a secret. Like, he's like, no, nobody has to know. I just want to know about Julian Assange.
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, I'm just sitting here fucking eating the sandwich, right? And then he's talking about, I don't know why you're defending this guy. He's a Russian spy. He fucking helped Trump win the election, right? And then I asked him. I was like, huh? And let me ask you, right? Let me ask you a question. Like, why hasn't he been charged with any of the Russian leaks, the DNC leaks, right? He's like, hey, man, you know, you asking all the questions. Now you want to ask me a question. Now, you know, he's like, and I asked him, he's like, yeah, huh? And when are they going to extradite him? Like, right, I was just throwing it out there, right? Because I'm sitting there choking a sandwich now. And he's like, well, as you know, Mr. Hammond, you know, it could take a while. There was that guy, that old hacker from a long time ago, looking for alien information. And he's talking about Gary McKinnon, right? And I was like, oh, Gary McKinnon? He's like, oh, yeah, that's him, yeah. And then there was the other person, Lori Love, who I'm sure you're familiar with, right? I was like, uh-huh. He's like, yeah, they, you know, they were fighting their extradition and won, right? And that took a long process, right? So then one of the other guys in the room, he just said something like, oh, yeah, you know, you could be moving on with your life. You know, you're still in jail. No, they're really, like, trying to convince me, which is really startling. Like, they're really, like, thinking, and I think it was disingenuous from the beginning, like, Like, clearly they didn't know I was going to, like, say anything at all. But now they're, like, thinking that they could, like, talk to me, right? And one of them is something like, oh, well, you know, Kayla, you know, for example, who apparently is my co-defendant. And he's like, yeah, he's a professor, you know, and, you know, he's moved on with his life and all that. And I was like, who's Kayla? Right? And they all look at me like surprised because, like, I had forgotten, but that's, like, one of the nicknames of one of my co-defendants in the UK. And I was like, but I haven't even thought about this stuff in so long, dude. I don't remember the nickname, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you want to talk about Julian Assange, huh? I don't know. Not him or anybody. He's like, huh? So, but what about Sabu? Would you be willing to talk about Sabu? Right? And that threw me further. I was like, what? Like, where are you going with this? Where are you going with this, right? But, which I thought was actually kind of surprising. Right? So anyways, but I didn't even want to, like, open that whole little can. I was like, no, I have nothing to say. It's not about who the target of the investigation is, but it's a matter of principle. I'm refusing to answer any questions from the grand jury. And I think the reason why they asked the question is because, you know, one of the questions they asked me about Julian Assange was they wanted to know whether he had, like, ordered me to hack into any targets or gave me a list of any targets or that WikiLeaks agreed to publish any of the, you know, stuff that I hacked, which, of course, I was not going to answer in any circumstances, right? You know, even though, you know, what I did on my own and chose to do it because it's what I wanted to do. I believed in, you know, these targets deserve to be hacked, and so I did it, right? But, you know, what was interesting, and I wrote this in my statement, is that, you know, the informant, Sabu, he also likely testified in front of this grand jury, right? But the thing about it is he was the only one who was actually asking me to hack into any targets, give me a list of targets to hack into and so forth. So I thought that maybe that was the reason why he brought it up there, just to, or maybe he thought that maybe I was, like, motivated out of, like, pettiness or revenge or something like that I would be willing to testify against him for whatever reason. Like yeah, I'm not even.
Yeah, right.
And then the FBI guy, he busts out a notebook, pad and pen, right? And that was when I realized, like, man, fuck this shit. Like, man, this is over. This conversation is over. Dude, we're not sitting here and fucking, like, going down memory lane, and we're getting too comfortable here. Like, it's over. It's over. It's, all right. You know? And then it was over.
God damn, what the fuck? Man,
yeah,
it was
really weird. So even after the grand jury, they wanted to, like, keep talking to me, like really trying to convince me.
Maybe they think that the case is over, and they're like, okay, we tried, and we know we're done with. We just figured out our last pitch, and now we just want to finish it up in our minds or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's they realize that this hearing on Friday could go against them, that, you know, Trenga might just be sick of this whole thing. You know, Chelsea, of course, has been down for 11 months on this grand jury, you know. And we have pretty convincing arguments as far as why, you know, this Grumbel's motion might succeed. So, this Friday, at this hearing. So, you know, it's a public hearing. Everybody's welcome to come check it out. The whole Grumbel's motion is basically that a judge has, at their discretion, the ability to decide that the person that they're holding in contempt is, in fact, incoercible, that there's nothing that could change this person's mind, right? And if that's the case, that continuing to hold them and incarcerated takes on a more punitive character. Like, you're punishing the person for their not cooperating instead of you really think that this person can be coerced, right? And so basically our argument is that, look at this guy's history, you know. You know, my whole life I've basically fought for the struggle, that, you know, I've demonstrated my willingness to get arrested and do time like it ain't nothing, you know what I mean? And so after all this, there's nothing that not a couple months could ever do. Not this or any grand jury. Would I be willing to cooperate in any circumstance? And so, therefore, them continuing to hold me is actually punishment for my refusal, which is illegal. Like, they can't punish somebody or hold them unless you've been convicted of a crime. But legally, the whole, you know, coercion thing, they can hold you if they think that they can be coerced, which is, you know, of course, not the case. So basically, we had to convince the judge that I'm incoercible. So we filed a motion, and you can check it out. And the hearing's this Friday.
The Grumbel's motion on Friday the 13th, the hearing, 3 p.m.
Be there.
I will be there in spirit. It's on Twitter, too. Yeah, and we'll post the motion.
And then him talking about how I could move on with my life and so forth got me thinking about that funky onion again, right? How basically I don't know how they would characterize this past, you know, 5 months, you know, I've been incarcerated here at Alexandria, and it's basically stolen time. You know, they stole my time. Like, all right, so who's the thief in the situation? You know, who stole from who? Forget onion. Like, there's nothing that we could do to get that time back. You know what I mean? You know, it didn't apply towards my federal sentence. So, you know, once this whole thing is over, I got to go back to the feds and finish my sentence, right? But I think about those 6 months, like, dude, what about it, you know? once I beat this case. Like, and this is what I think should happen. I think it should apply towards my next crime. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's like a get out of jail free card. Next time I do, it's like, oh, hold up. I just spent 6 months for nothing. So release me. This is a free.
They'll just stamp your card, you know, and then be, okay, get moving. That's it for this one.
Cool.
You've been listening to Czar Bomba, Funk from Chicago. Check the music out. Their links are in the description. Until next crime.
Until next crime.
Twin trouble.
Out of the people.
Try it again.
Brilliant.
I am Jason. I'm sorry.
And I am Jeremy.
I'll try it again. I am Jason.
And I am Jeremy.
And we are Twin Trouble.
Yo. What up?
No, we actually get shit for not getting that quite right. But anyway.
Really?
Twin Trouble.
Click send. Repeat. Hey, dude. Right. I gotta go take a shower real quick.
All right.
Just so happens that with an executive order, a president can make marijuana legal in every state in this country. And I invite you to the ceremony when we do just that. Matter of fact, maybe we'll do it right here in Grant Park.
Okay, and before we wrap this episode up, we have the letter section. There's one question that I received that I'd like to address. And, you know, I as I was relaying to somebody the story about this onion, right, they actually asked me, so how did you even get the onion in? You know, how did you manage to sneak the onion back to yourself? Why don't you pat you down? Somebody's like, well, I'm glad you had, you know, of course, you know, I'm not willing to answer any question that would reveal any tactics or methods that, you know, are ongoing, and we wouldn't want to give them a heads up, but I'm going to just put it like this. Like, it just takes some pretty big balls to do it, you know what I mean? To walk on the bridge.
Shut up. That's ridiculous. I'm not putting that in the podcast.
Okay.
That's hilarious.